Thank you very much for having me here. I think in 7 years, it's only the second time I've been at PI, so it's good to get going. So I'm Chris Wilson. So I'm an experimentalist at IQC working in superconducting quantum circuits. And I'll talk to you about work. So my PhD student Sembo Chang really developed this platform, and he just turned in his dissertation yesterday, so that's good. And then this is a postdoc, and some younger students have worked on this. So just quickly, because this is a little bit of a meet and greet, so my group is called the Engineered Quantum System Lab, and we have a number of different projects. So we have a lot of things, say, working on microwave quantum optics and waveguide QED. I'll talk today about kind of our work with quantum simulations. And then we also have some projects kind of working more on like gate-based quantum computing, including starting to dabble in quantum machine learning. So a platform that we've been developing for several years now, and again, this is work a lot led by Sembo, is what I call superconducting parametric cavities. So going very quickly, the idea is basically we take a length of superconducting transmission line, so something we make in the clean room on chip, we cut it, and then that length defines a set of resonant frequency modes. And so if we make the thing about a centimeter long, those resonance frequencies are in the microwave, so gigahertz frequencies. And so if we make the cavity kind of particularly long, say, so that the first resonance frequency is a gigahertz, we can get several resonant modes that fit in our measurement bandwidth. So we have a multi-mode cavity that we can access. And then the other thing that we do is one of the ends where we've cut it, we put in a superconducting device called a squid, which you don't have to know anything about a squid, except in this case that we will call it essentially a parametric inductance. And what it allows us to do is change the boundary condition of our cavity by applying a magnetic flux through the loop of the squid. And that allows us to tune the frequency of the cavity. And although the really important thing about the squid is that this can respond very, very fast. So we can tune these frequencies at gigahertz frequencies, or 10 or 20 gigahertz frequencies. So we can change the frequency of the cavity at frequencies much higher than the resonant frequency of the cavity. And this actually allows us to do some interesting things. So a little bit more detail. This is what I'd write down as the more detailed Hamiltonian of my squid, where I have these cosine potentials that come from the Josephson effect. But essentially, there's two parts. So there's one part that contains the pump signal that I'm putting it at many gigahertz to drive. We'll find out interactions between the signal. And then we have the other term, this cosine term, that contains the signals in the cavity, which then will, if I start writing out operators, mixes all of these different modes. So say this is three resonant modes of my cavity. And then now where I've just expanded this cosine to quadratic order. And then I have the pump turn, which I expand to linear order around some flux bias. And so now I get a Hamiltonian that looks like this, where I also will treat my flux pump as now a classical signal. So I make a parametric approximation. And then you can see now if I square this, I get many, many cross terms. I get lots of different quadratic interactions. But what we can do is by picking certain frequencies, so say, you know, in an interaction picture, all of these cross terms will have their own frequency, right? And so by picking a pump term that's resonant with these different terms, I can, you know, in the appropriate rotating frame, or I can make an rotating wave approximation and pick out, say, if I pick the sum of two frequency modes, I get something that looks like a parametric down conversion Hamiltonian. So this creates two-mode squeezing, creates entanglement. Or I can pick the difference frequency of two modes, and this creates something like a beam splitter interaction. So it just allows me to coherently swap. And a nice feature of this, though, also is that this interaction strength now includes the pump strength from up here. So I have interaction strengths that I can turn on and off, and I can control their strength, all in situ. And just as an example, this was a paper where we showed that we can use this by applying multiple of these pump tones. We can create continuous variable entanglement between three modes of this cavity. And this is just showing measurements of the covariance matrix from which we can kind of do an entanglement measure that tells us that we have genuine tripartite entanglement between these three modes. What I want to talk about today is in trying to think about applying this for this platform for analog quantum simulation of field theories. So what's the basic idea? So there's been lots of theoretical proposals in the literature in the last few years, thinking about looking at photonic lattices as a platform for simulating field theories. And as one example, this was a paper where they actually look at kind of simulating gauge field dynamics. And the idea here is that, you know, as we mentioned, we have this photonic lattice. So each of these nodes now is some kind of mode. So it could be individual cavities. In our case, we're going to think about them as frequency modes inside a single cavity. And then you have some way of turning on some tunnel coupling or hopping between these modes. But the interesting thing is if I can control the phase of these tunnelings and kind of make them in a certain map, I can think about, you know, then when my particle hops, it acquires a path-dependent phase. And I can think about that, you know, as coming from the line integral of some fictitious vector potential, right? So if I have this lattice and I can program these phases, I can simulate the motion of a particle in a vector potential. So I can simulate a lattice with the right pattern, I can simulate a lattice gauge field. So that's our idea. So we think about our system, we want to use our system for this, and it's exactly this. We want to make programmable lattices. So I have this one device that has a set of frequency modes, but the interactions are controlled just by these pumps, right? So I can cool down one device, and by turning on different pumps, I can program essentially whatever lattice I want. So I can have triangular or square or a line. But importantly also, since these are pumps, the phase of that pump sets the phase of the hopping terms that I generate. So I can really generate this kind of gauge potential. So that's the idea. So, you know, in a single device, we can do lots of different models. One model that we've thought about, so this was a theoretical work that we did with collaborators in Bilbao, but it's something called the Kruitz ladder, which is an old model from quantum field theory. So it's a ladder model, so two 1D chains with kind of cross-topping like this. This was interesting, it turns out, because you can get, it's one of the earlier models where you can get chiral transports, and you also get topological end states and things like that. So it's kind of interesting. We haven't fully done it, but here's some, as a step towards there, here's some experimental data where we do just, say, a triangle, right? So this is already interesting enough because I, you know, between any two points, I have two paths. So I can start to see interference effects in terms of which direction the photons are going. And so what I show here are experimental measurements of the full scattering matrix of our kind of three-mode lattice, right? Where we're turning on the pumps, and we can already see a lot of, so the diagonals here are measuring just reflection from a single mode, so it's basically the spectrum of the system, and then the off diagonals are measuring transport between the modes, so putting in a signal at, say, mode one and seeing what comes out at mode two. And then the axis in each case here is just the phase, the loop phase around this thing. So I'm not changing any powers, I'm not changing any frequencies, everything is stable, I'm just changing the phase around the loop, and you can see that has dramatic effects on the system. So both, I mean, so we can see things here just from this. We see, say if I take a line cut here, you know, when I measure with my network analyzer at the around, say, the, you know, around one mode, I actually see three modes here. So that tells me that I've generated this multi-mode strong coupling. I've gotten hybridization of my modes, and the coupling, which is the spacing between these lines, is greater than the dissipation. So I have multi-mode strong coupling, but you see, interesting, as a function of phase, you know, some of the couplings, you know, disappear. So I have this interesting phase dependence. And I can also see already here non-reciprocal or chiral transport. So if I look here, this is the transport from mode two to mode one, and this is the transport from mode one to mode two. But you see along this line, I have strong transport in this direction and no transport in the other direction. So I've already succeeded just by adding these phases and getting a non-reciprocal transport in this simple model. So another model that we've been examining, so this was a theory proposal from Osh Clerk's group, formerly at McGill, now in Chicago, where they came up with a kind of bosonic version of the Kataev chain or Kataev-Majorana model. So just to remind you, so what is this, you know, now famous Kataev model? It's a very simple model. So it's a 1D chain of fermionic sites. And what you have in the Hamiltonian is you have hopping between the sites, so here, and then you also have a kind of, you have a pairing potential, so you can think of it as being like a superconducting system, right? And what Kataev found was that, so I can solve this system in terms of some, what he called, or have been called, Majorana fermions, which are just these superposition of the electron operators. And this has become very famous because what you find out is that at the end of these chains, you have topologically protected end states that people think about using for quantum computing, right? And just, so I am not an expert on topology, but so what I've learned is that, you know, one way of seeing the idea that this Hamiltonian has topology is that if I transform to K space or momentum space, I write the Hamiltonian like this, and now you can see the two terms of the Hamiltonian here wind through K space. So I have a winding number in K space, which is topological. And that's kind of where the interesting features come from. So how can we do this in our system? So this is a proposal for a bosonic version of it. We don't get all the same things, but what's the idea? Now we have our 1D chain, so we just turn on the right pump frequencies. So we have the difference frequency pumping, which creates our hopping, but now we also turn on our two-photon down conversion between pairs of modes. And so this is the down conversion Hamiltonian, but in this context, we can interpret it as a pairing potential. So we make something that looks kind of exactly like the Kataev Hamiltonian, except these are bosonic operators and not fermionic operators, which changes it a bit. At the same time, so we have our mode frequencies. We get our phases, But then, the important point is that with the right choice of phases, we still, this is now our Hamiltonian in K space, there's still topological winding here. So they're not fermions, but we still have topology. So it turns out you don't get kind of topologically protected end states that I can do quantum computing with, so this is not a route to error correction, but I think it's still neat. And what you do get, from the topology is interestingly chiral transport, or it's predicted. Well, you get chiral transport. So the idea is I can solve this model in the same way in terms of kind of Majorana-like modes that I write this way. But if anyone's familiar with quantum optics, you can see that these are just what we normally call the quadratures of the field. So this is like the sine and cosine component of my field. In quantum optics, they often call them X and P. In microwaves, we call them I and Q. So I can solve it in terms of these I and Q. And what I find an easiest way to see it is to just write the Heisenberg equation of motions for these quadratures. And what I find is that it looks like this as a function of kind of the two terms, the hopping and the pairing potential. But if I get these two terms to be close to each other, what I see is that the X and P dynamics completely decouple. So the two quadratures decouple from each other, and it also becomes asymmetric. So one quadrature propagates in one direction and one propagates in the other. So I get chiral transport of my kind of particles in this chain. So we look to explore this experimentally. We've done it with three or four sites. You know, it's a lot of pumps. But the idea here is, so we're turning on all these difference frequency pumps, some frequency pumps, and then we're going to inject a signal into the centered mode and then look at what comes out. So at, say, the two ends, but we can also look at the reflection here. And this is the basic story, what we see. So we're measuring what's coming out at the two ends when we inject in the center as a function of the phase of the signal that we're putting in. So we're tuning between injecting one quadrature and the other quadrature. And what you see is that we get this chiral transport. For one phase, the signal goes all in one direction and not in the other, and then it swaps when we change the phase by pi over 2. So we see this chiral transport of these quadratures. And just as one last thing, you know, if we want to think of them as particles, maybe wave packets are better, which means you also need finite bandwidth to the effect. But here's the idea. We put in two pulses that the amplitude's the same, but they have different phase. So one is in, say, the X quadrature, one is in the P quadrature. And you see that we get out, it's not perfectly tuned up, but we get this chiral transport. One pulse goes to one side and one pulse goes to the other side. Okay, thank you. Questions?
Could you explain what chiral is?
Chiral just means, well, it comes from, if you think about elementary particles, chiral means, say, I distinguish between, say, one spin and the other. So I distinguish between one spin and the other spin, but it can mean also that because of that, can distinguish between, say, left-handed and right-handed particles. So it kind of ends up turning into something where I can distinguish, say, you know, spin going in this way or spin going in that way. But in the language of wave guides and things like this, it's also come to mean kind of I can make things propagate in one direction and the other. So essentially, that's one interesting thing here. If I even just think about it as a wave guide, now I have a wave guide where something can only propagate in one direction and not the other direction.
Can you comment on the scalability of this type of system?
Right. Yeah, I think there's a, you know, I think we've gone up to something like, you know, as many as 6 nodes in one device, limited just by the number of pumps that we have. I mean, the number of microwave generators. I think, so there's certainly no limit. I mean, we can put tons and tons of modes. I think the limit is more probably how many pumps, simultaneous pumps, can I turn on before I start having problems with higher order nonlinearities. But you know, we've already gone to several, and I think the way of thinking about it though is that, I mean, we can also now couple many cavities together, right? So we're getting a kind of a level of hardware efficiency out of this. So maybe we can have one cavity that has 8 nodes, but then I can have many cavities like that that I couple together to go even farther.
Okay, well, let's thank Chris and all the speakers.